Top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
I know what you're thinking. Mine's bigger than yours, right? It's not fair. Throw it away. All right? All right!
Tell me about Disneyland.
They got tons of popcorn there.
Yeah.
And all you gotta do is go climb a tree to go eat it.
It was a night like any other night. Then something happened.
Oh, good Lord. It's unbelievable. Horrible.
Hey, wait, there's something weird here.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family. A murdered teen returns from the grave as a supernatural creature craving vengeance against those who conspired against him. On this special episode of the Really Awful Movies podcast, Johnny Gruesome, which is directed by Greg Lamberson, best known for Slime City and Killer Wreck. Johnny Gruesome wrapped up principal photography in July, shot in upstate New York. Can't wait to see it. In this discussion, you'll hear from April Ann, the film's co-star, John Renna, the film's co-producer, Greg Lamberson, its director, Craig Lindberg, the special effects man, and Anthony De La Torre, the film's star who plays Johnny Gruesome. Enjoy.
So I'm here on the set of Johnny Gruesome, speaking to April Ann, who plays Karen. April, tell me a little bit about your character.
My character is the girlfriend of Johnny Gruesome, mm-hmm. or Johnny Gruesome, who turns Gruesome. Mm-hmm. He dies pretty early on into the film, leaving me completely distraught and depressed. I turn to alcohol and to try to relieve some of the pain. And Gary, who has had a crush on me for a while, gets me into drugs, things like that, cocaine. So I've completely, pretty much turned into somebody else after Johnny dies. And I lean on Gary as a way to sort of, a way to have some relief from all the pain mm-hmm. from Johnny dying. So Gary sort of takes advantage of his opportunity of me being really vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. Now the drugs and the alcohol and all that, did you have to draw in real life for that or?
No, I've never been in any sort of situation like this. I can imagine how I would feel if this really happened to me. That's sort of just, I just had to sort of tap into what I would feel like. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I did. And I imagine that it's very possible I could turn to those kind of things. You know, you don't know what you're capable of until you're put into a certain situation. So, like, my character helps cover up the murder, mm-hmm. which in real life I would think I wouldn't ever do that. Mm-hmm. But again, you don't really know what you would do until you're put into that situation. Because everyone's capable of anything. Mm-hmm.
So this is your first film, correct?
Yes.
And how did you get the role?
I saw the casting on Backstage, mm-hmm. and I submitted my headshot and my reel, and Greg had looked at my music videos and really wanted me to audition, and I was sort of hesitant because there's some intimate scenes that I didn't know if I would be comfortable doing, mm-hmm. but I auditioned anyway, and then he gave me the role, and I took it because I met with him in New York City where I'm from, and he's so respectful, and the crew and the cast have all been so respectful and so nice and so easy to work with. So it's been a really, really good experience, mm-hmm. especially for my first film. I was coming in kind of nervous, but they've all made me feel really welcome. The makeup and wardrobe team are awesome. So I've had a really great time on this film.
Fantastic. Now, you mentioned music videos. Are you a musician as well?
Or? Yes. I sing. I have 5 songs out on iTunes right now and 3 music videos out. I just do that independently. I'm not signed to a label or anything. Mm-hmm. But I write all my own music, and so that's what I do as well.
And so 2013, you had your first song. Now in 2016, you have your first movie.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's been awesome.
Where do you see yourself going? More in the music direction or more in the acting direction? Or a bit of both?
A lot of people ask me that. I honestly couldn't pick one. I love them so much equally. Music lets me express myself personally more just because I'm writing my own music, mm-hmm. and as far as my music goes, it's all really personal, as opposed to acting where I'm creating a different version of myself. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I love them both really equally.
If you could describe the type of music that you write, that you play, is it?
My biggest inspiration for my music is Taylor Swift, mm-hmm. who writes. You know, she's known for writing very personal songs, and she sort of gets a lot of hate for it sometimes. But as from a feminist standpoint, it's considered very sort of, I don't know, like you're complaining, or if you're writing breakup songs, which is what I tend to write too, mm-hmm. Very Adele-type sad ballads, things like that I really love. And she as well is a huge inspiration. She writes all her own music, and I just love the aspect of being in... like them being in the limelight and being so open about who they were with, who the songs are about. You know, Taylor Swift even mentions people's names in her song. I think that's really brave to do because, I mean, she knows the backlash that she gets a lot of times, and she does it anyway because that's just where her art takes her. So that's what I strive to do, is just be really brave in my music and write exactly how I feel in that moment and like let it show through that.
Now, moving back to Johnny Gruesome, it's a teen horror film.
Yes.
Are you a fan of horror?
I am a fan of horror. I love the Purge movies. Like, the Purge movies are, like, my favorite horror films, but most of my friends and family don't really like horror films, mm-hmm. so I don't go out and search them out as much as I'd like to, but I think after this, I'll definitely be more into them.
And you mentioned earlier that the set has been wonderful, the cast and crew has been wonderful. Tell me a bit more about working with Greg Lamberson.
Greg was awesome. He really, even just the auditioning process, like I said, I was sort of hesitant to send in my audition tape because I didn't know for sure if I would take the role. But he emailed me separately and was like, you know, we loved your music videos, my daughter's been singing your songs, and it sort of just made me feel already like they... wanted me to come aboard before I had even auditioned. So immediately off the bat, he was so friendly and so nice, and then I met him and his wife for our interview, mm-hmm. and they just were so warm and welcoming, and it seemed like it was going to be a really safe environment, really great experience, so I didn't want to turn it down. And Greg's been awesome. He sort of let me have a say in what I wanted to wear and how my makeup would be, things like that, which I wasn't expecting. And for me being on film, I like to, like, you know, do my makeup a certain way, wear certain things, and they really let me have a voice when it came to that, which I was surprised and really grateful that they did that. And he's just an amazing director and an awesome person to work with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Greg and his wife are wonderful people.
Yeah.
I can attest to that. Did you watch any of Greg's prior films before coming on set for Johnny Gruesome?
I hadn't. I read Johnny Gruesome, the mm-hmm. book, to get a feel of the character and everything, and his writing is really great, and I'm definitely going to be, you know, searching out all of his stuff after this, books included.
Now, you know, Johnny Gruesome is sort of like Greg's dream project,
yeah.
Labor of Love. He's been trying to get this off the ground for
years.
32 years, so
yeah.
A project that... you know, that's been with you for 32 years, and you've been obviously thinking about it, and who would I cast to play Johnny, and obviously who he would cast for his dream project would be somebody very significant that he would have a lot of faith in. So I think it's a testament to your audition and your acting and whatnot that he cast you in Johnny Gruesome.
Yeah, and I'm so grateful that he did it without me having any prior experience, because that's what he asked me. He's like, you know, I saw on your resume you don't really have anything on there. And I'm like, yeah, but I really wanted to show him that I was the right person for the part. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that it went well. Mm-hmm.
Now, the actor who's playing Johnny, Anthony De La Torre, correct? He's kind of going places, so to speak. He's a musician too, correct?
Yeah.
What was it like working with Anthony?
Working with Anthony was awesome. He has, like, a presence about him that when he walks into a room, like, you notice him. I don't really know how to explain it, but he just has such a warm, welcoming presence, and he's so friendly. And he was in some of the intimate scenes with me, and he was very, very respectful. So was Chris, and just very friendly and easy to work with. Definitely someone that you want as your co-star, because you want someone that makes you feel comfortable and gives you things to react to, and he's just an amazing actor.
It's been an honor to speak to you.
Thank you, as soon as
you finished your first movie role. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And I wish you the best of luck with your music career. Of course, Johnny Gruesome, I can't wait to see it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Here we are in beautiful Buffalo on a sweltering hot day, the set of Johnny Gruesome. We're talking with co-producer John Renna.
Howdy, everyone.
Who, not only is he a co-producer on Johnny Gruesome, he's also a director in his own right, who directed Dick Johnson and The Cannibal Cop.
That's correct. Dick Johnson and Tommy Gunn versus The Cannibal Cop. Right.
So we'll talk about that in a moment, but first let's talk about Johnny Gruesome.
For sure.
So you and Greg go back.
Yes, Greg and I first met in 2008, 2009, when we were working on Slime City Massacre. He liked my attitude and my willingness to do as much work as possible for free, and I ended up playing the Mayor of Slime City, and we really got to know each other on that set, because I was also the production manager, and I was basically getting yelled at a lot by Greg. It was my first time being on a set that was closer to a real set. It was my first time being on anything that wasn't ultra, ultra, ultra low budget.
And you also were in Dry Bones?
That's right. I played Carl in Dry Bones, and I also was in a little cameo in Killer Rack, mm-hmm. and I was one of the co-stars in Gave Up the Ghost. So I have quite the history with Greg, as well as Greg is kind of one of my mentors. He really showed me a lot in the film industry and helped me get my feet wet, and he was just a really talented guy and a lot of fun to work with, and we just basically became very close friends.
You know, having known Greg now for the past few years, correct me if I'm wrong, but one thing I've observed about Greg is he's the type of guy, he doesn't suffer fools gladly.
Yeah. You could say that. Greg is definitely, he wears his heart on his sleeve, we'll say. If something has to be done in a certain way, film sets they're very military, very bracketed. You have Grip Electric, and that's all that they do. And you have camera, that's all that they do. And we don't have time to beat around the bush. So if there's something wrong, he lets you know. If there's something he doesn't like, he lets you know. If he thinks that sounded completely stupid, he's not afraid to be like, ah, no. You know, it's just, he knows exactly what he wants, and he doesn't sugarcoat anything for the sake of time. Mm-hmm. He's more worried about getting you the proper information than your feelings. He's just one of those kind of guys where he's very to the point, but you need to have that as a director. Mm-hmm. It's all about time management, and he's really good at it.
But on the other hand, if you're somebody who does good work, works hard, Greg is completely loyal to you, he'll...
Yeah, Greg is the kind of guy who, even if he knows someone is going to probably not do something they're supposed to, he would let them shoot themselves in the foot before he didn't give them a chance if they were somebody who's been there for him in the past, around for him in the past. He's extremely loyal to the people who work for him. And if anybody, you know, is around that he likes working with, he's always going to try to get them involved if he can. And but like I said, he's also, you know, he doesn't beat around the bush. So if there's just no room, he'll be like, I'm sorry, there's no room. And some people can get upset about that kind of thing, you know, but it's like, there's only so much you can do with the budgets that we have. In a perfect world, one day we'll be producing movies for a couple of $1 million, and then, you know, we won't be going out and doing things much differently. We'll have the people that we work with. We'll just have a lot more freedom, I think.
But this film, Johnny Gruesome, this is by far the largest budget that Greg has worked with.
Oh, yeah. I worked with Erin, who is our executive producer. She is a friend of mine, and we were talking about some things to possibly do with some money that she had, whether it was buy some equipment or produce a film or something along those lines, and we weren't exactly sure what to do. And then Greg called me one day and said, man, John, I think the funding for Johnny might fall through again. He's been trying for over 30 years to get the movie made. And, you know, there's a saying in the film industry, and it trickles down to other things in life. If the money's not in the bank, it doesn't exist. People can tell you they're going to produce a movie with you all day long, but until that money hits your bank account, you know, you can have promises in one hand and doo-doo in the other and see which hand fills up first. It can be tough. A lot of people have went ahead, spent a bunch of money, and found out the major chunk of their budget's not there. And it's just, that's one of the hardest parts in the film, is coming up with the cash to make it, especially when you don't have a big studio backing you or anything like that. All that we have is a really good story and a lot of talented people.
Well, this is Greg's dream project.
Oh, yeah.
32 years in the making, so to speak.
Yeah. So basically what happened was, after Greg contacted me, I told him, well, let me see what I can do, hang tight. And I contacted Erin right away, and I said, Erin, I think we have a chance here to sit down and talk to Greg and get involved in a project that has a script that's been polished for over 30 years, and a guy who's been planning a shoot for, you know, since he was a teenager, just waiting for the right time to make this movie. And I just felt as though that was the right way to go. That was the right decision, was to maybe help make Johnny happen, because the storyline is by far my favorite thing Greg's written. And I mean, I love everything. It's really good, but there's something about Johnny that speaks to me. To give you an idea of how great the story is, my wife read the book 3 times. I mean, you know, so, and she said that I'm not allowed to work on set if she can't get there for at least a day or two to see this, to see it happen, in between watching my kids, of course.
Were you involved in the casting process at all?
On the outside. With this project, this is definitely Greg's baby, and he's been planning it forever, and I haven't had to do all that much. I've pretty much had to sit back and just let Greg bring together everything that he's been working on and planning for so long. Even now, Greg, I'm the producer on the set, which means I kind of walk around, and if something happens, I spring into action, or if Greg needs me to go to a location or whatever, or, you know, get tickets for something, or bring, you know, one of the people locally, Perry's Ice Cream brought us over a bunch of ice cream. Pick you up at the airport. Exactly. Just basically, you know, try to help as much as I can without, I'm not exactly one of the, like, the team. It's like, you know, it's very segmented,
right,
how a film set works. So, yeah.
Now, before we talk about your film, when you did Picking Up Today, you were mentioning something about, and you don't, if you don't want to talk about it, you don't have to, but you're mentioning something about a hand. There was a bit of an incident with a hand.
Oh, yeah. There was a bit of an incident with a hand. We've been working on making a dummy for the film for a while. I don't want to get too into it because I don't want any spoilers or anything. But Greg is a perfectionist. Everything has to be completely perfect. So we have been trying to get this prop perfect for Greg, and we've been trying and trying and trying, and Greg has been critical all the way through. But, you know, that's how Greg is. He's going to tell you exactly what he wants, and it's my job to do light bulb busting, but try to make it happen. So I was transferring one of the two hands that we had, and this hand needed some work. It was made with a rigid foam, so some stuff cracked on it, and we had to repair it. I thought the hand was made of silicone, and it turns out the hand was made of gelatin. So sitting in my car in a 90-degree day at 100% humidity in Buffalo, the next time I walked out to the car, it was a puddle of gelatin with foam that looked kind of like a hand. So I saw that, and after my eyes bugged out of my head and my jaw dropped, I realized, oh my God, this is gelatin, and panic ensued. But the good news is, after some finagling, we have everything to cast the new hand, and it is righted now. But you never know what could happen on a movie set.
Speaking of movie sets, you've made your own movie. Correct me if I'm mistaken, but did your film not play at the last Buffalo Dreams Film Festival?
Yes, it did. It played at Buffalo Dreams Film Festival, and it got a couple of awards.
Mm-hmm. Now, sorry to interrupt, I got the title a bit wrong at the beginning. This is Dick Johnson and Tommy Gunn
versus the Cannibal Cop. And if you want to take the name all the way, it's actually based on a true story. But it's extremely loosely based on a true story. Kind of like, you know, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, where it's based on Ed Gein, who's from Wisconsin and didn't kill anybody with a chainsaw. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of those things. So even the title is kind of a punchline.
So you mentioned you won some awards.
Won a couple of awards at Buffalo Dreams, won Best Feature at the Real Bronx International Film Festival. Basically, what happened was we got about $9,000 together. We were hoping to get some more, but the crowdfunding campaign were like, who are these knuckleheads? You know, we didn't really make our money. So we had $9,000 in place. I took a really close look at the budget, did some finagling, and we basically made it work. I say $9,000. Oh, lunch has been called. I say $9,000 because we had about $1,200 worth of food that my mother provided. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just put together this movie, bare bones, shot with an over-the-counter Best Buy camera, a Canon 7D, a really great little camera, and we just basically did the work of 40 people with just a handful of us in 2 weeks in July.
Now, before it gets too noisy back here with people coming and get their lunch and stuff, you have some pretty unique cameos in roles in Dick Johnson.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of 80s horror films, and one of my favorites is the Evil Dead trilogy. I love all of it. Huge fan. So I brought in, besides my good friend Debbie Rashawn, I also brought in one of my heroes of film, Danny Hicks, Jake from Evil Dead 2.
Awesome guy. Yep.
Amazing guy. One of the coolest dudes you'll ever met. We seem to become instant friends. And he is one hell of an actor. I mean, the first scene that we shot was in the captain's office with Danny. And I was the first person to follow his lines. And when he said his lines, I blinked for mine because I was so in awe at his delivery the first time I heard it and how perfect it was that I literally flubbed my own line in my own script. So, yeah, that was how much I enjoyed his performance. And I mean, you had said cameos, but these guys are actually some of the stars in the movie. We had them for almost the entire shoot, about 10 days.
Nice.
And the other is Timothy Patrick Quill, a.k.a. the blacksmith from Army of Darkness. He's done a bunch of films. Everything Sam's done, he's been involved in some way. Mm-hmm. And he's just the greatest. Super nice guy, really down to earth. Really likes what he does, knows all his lines, has his character down pat. I really enjoyed working with him, and I recommend him to anybody. And, of course, I mentioned her first, and I'll mention her again at the end, the great Debbie Rashawn. One of my favorite actresses roaming around the indie circuit. She's done, about 250 films at this point? One better than the next. Mm-hmm. You can have a movie that's completely horrible, and the moments Debbie are on screen are just breathtaking moments in cinema. She's just a great actress, and I had so much fun working with her. And, of course, Dick Johnson was played by Sam Qualiana, who's first AD on this film, and the director of Snow Shark, Ancient Snow Beast, The Legend of Six Fingers, and a slew of other short films.
And he's also in Killer Rack, right?
He plays Dutch, yeah. With perhaps one of my favorite scenes of violence in a movie. Laughed really hard. He was really, really good in that.
Well, John, I mean, seems like everybody's kind of coming back here to fill their plates, so...
I'm going
to
get yelled at if I don't get up and eat for Last Man. Even though I'm the producer, that's how it goes, you know.
But I want to say, I can't wait to see Dick Johnson.
I can't wait to show it to you, to be honest. I love having a chance for people to see the film just to see what they think and what they think of how the jokes hit and everything. It's fun.
And I can't wait to see Johnny Gruesome. So thank you so much for talking to me.
Thank you for coming. I really appreciate you coming out to our set and just taking a look around and being able to see some of the film happen. This one's going to be special. I know it is.
Thanks a lot, John.
You know it. Thank you.
So I'm staying with Greg Lamberson, the man himself, the writer, the director. It's about everything, eh? On the set of Johnny Gruesome. First, I want to say, Greg, thank you so much for inviting me down here to... we're not quite in Buffalo. Where are we?
We are in the town of Lancaster, which is next to both Akron and Clarence, both of which we're shooting in, which are suburbs, far suburbs of Buffalo. Johnny Gruesome is set in the town of Red Hill, which is a fictional version of the town I grew up in called Fredonia. Couldn't shoot in Fredonia. It wasn't practical to go an hour away, but we found other small towns nearby that are sort of substituting. Can't actually shoot in Buffalo to get a small town feeling either.
It's amazing because, I don't know, I guess it was the early 90s when I was walking around a local video store and I saw the cover for Slime City.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, man, I gotta see this movie. I grabbed it, took it home, and said, this is fucking incredible. Where's this film been all my life? And now, all these years later, here I am on the set of Johnny Gruesome. Kind of a dream come true for me, but obviously a dream come true for you. This is like the third to a year labor of love.
Yeah. I wrote the script 32 years ago. Somehow, I got it to Vestron Video. Vestron Pictures was the biggest video company in the world, and they were starting to make movies. They'd already released Reanimator and From Beyond. So they called me and my partner at the time, who was really just a classmate from film school, mm-hmm. down for a meeting. We put on our suits, which was a big mistake, and I proceeded to give the worst job interview ever. So the film didn't go off the ground. Several times over the years, somebody expressed interest in reading it, didn't really go anywhere, so I turned it into a novel in 2007. Really, I turned it into a novel because I was trying to get some stuff going with the Jake Hellman Files, my other book series, and I had published that as a small press book, and I was having trouble getting a mass market publisher to reprint it because they don't like to do reprints. So I said, let me do a different project that's sickeningly commercial, and then they'll publish that and they'll be so happy with it that they'll reprint the Jake Hellman Files. And that's exactly what happened. And you know, we did the marketing tie-ins with the CD and the mask that we sold, and first it was a limited edition that was illustrated, and then it was a mass market trade paperback. And I kind of thought I would get the character out of my system, but the fact is I've got multiple projects being developed by other filmmakers. Craig Sheffer's Carnage Road, George Mihalka for My Bloody Valentine has the Jake Hellman Files. But I'm totally at the mercy of what the development process is. And I want to see one of my books turned into a movie, so this is the one that I dug off. I've always held on to this one because it was the one I could still do on a low budget.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference between Johnny Gruesome and my other films is it's a low-budget film as opposed to a no-budget film.
Right.
You know, I actually have a crew of 35 people. We've got a cast of 30 people. There's a few volunteers, but for the most part, everyone's getting paid. We're shooting 6K, you know, which is 4K is all you need to be in a theater. Got a lot of toys to play with, so the production value is really there. So I will say that it is a better film than it would have been at any time during the preceding 32 years. So sometimes it's a good thing that things don't happen when you want them to.
So would you say then, I guess the stars headline, this is when you were meant to make Johnny Gruesome?
Absolutely, because I will say that Anthony De La Torre, mm-hmm. the guy who plays Johnny Gruesome, he submitted his headshot to me because of a backstage ad. And I didn't want to announce Johnny Gruesome, so I used a fake title and fake characters. And I got like 1,500 responses for the two characters, Johnny and his girlfriend Karen. And there were three guys, maybe, that I was kind of interested in, but he was the one that I knew, had the perfect look. And then when I did a little research and I found his music videos, I just knew without certain, this is the guy it's got to be. And I can't imagine anyone. It used to be a game with me over the years. Anytime I would see a horror movie or another film where there's sort of a juvenile delinquent character, mm-hmm. Oh, could he be a Johnny Gruesome?
So who were some of the, over the years, that you thought, he might have been Johnny Gruesome?
This is going way back. Yeah. I remember considering Kevin Dillon back when he did The Blob.
The Blob, yeah.
Okay.
When he had the big mullet, yeah.
And I went to I went to the School of Visual Arts in New York City, and Paul Dillon, who looks a lot more like Matt Dillon, mm-hmm. was on our floor, and I was playing, he's got the name connection. He wouldn't have been right either. And there have been many over the years, both Johnny Gruesome and Jake Hellman. I've thought of many different actors, and Johnny has always been kind of a tough nut because he's got to be, number one, he has to be convincingly young. He has to be charismatic. He has to become likable in a short amount of time before his character is killed and he comes back. And mm-hmm. Anthony hit all the notes. His interpretation was far better than anything I could have directed someone to do alone. He came up with such good things. He's perfect. April Ann is perfect, just like the character in the book. Richard Lunello, who plays the cop over there, all three of them are exactly like I imagined them as the book. Some of the other people, Byron Brown plays Eric, totally different take, more contemporary feeling. I mean, he's got sort of that Lenny Kravitz thing going, not at all the white bread nerd who's in the novel. But the whole cast has been fantastic. Mm-hmm.
Now you're in a very unique position because we were talking about this a few episodes ago on the podcast. We were talking about Children of the Corn and about Stephen King adaptations and how the majority of them are crap. And Stephen King said something along the lines of, when you give one of your books to someone to adapt, it's like sending your kid off to college.
Mm-hmm.
And they can either flourish and become something better, wonderful, or they can just crash and burn. Whereas what you're doing is you're actually making a movie based on your book, so that puts you in a very unique position.
What's interesting is that the novel, which is a novelization of a screenplay,
mm-hmm.
is the movie that I wanted to make out of the script at that time. It's very much a retro 80s fun heavy metal horror thing. The movie that I'm making now, I've had a lot of artists over the years do like comic adaptations and posters, and I always tell them, do your own interpretation, don't lock yourself into what I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm giving myself that freedom on this. Because we've already made the major change in that it's no longer set in the winter. It's set in July. So I've made some changes to that already. But I kind of got away from the whole retro 80s feeling and just wanted to make it feel as modern as possible once I saw who these different young actors were mm-hmm. playing the parts. So I'm kind of encouraging myself to depart from the book in numerous ways as well. So people expecting me to do a slavish adaptation of my own novel are going to be surprised. Mm-hmm. It's very much going to feel like someone other than me did the adaptation and directed it. Yeah.
But at least the derivations are your derivations.
Yeah.
Your choice.
And
yeah.
It's a lot of them are improvements, I see. I mean, I've had so many years to look at what worked and what could be improved in the story, and some of them, quite honestly, a lot of things were dictated by the budget. It's the biggest budget I've ever had, but it's still a super, super small budget as far as making a feature film these days.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the production value is really going to be there. I think it's going to look like it costs much more than it did. Got a fantastic cinematographer, full production design team. We had four people in makeup, including the effects guy, Craig Lindberg, my longtime friend, who also does straight makeup. So there are certain ways this feels like a much bigger film than it is.
I've been here all day watching the production, and everything seems like it's going smoothly. And obviously, no production goes 100%
mm-hmm.
smooth, but, following some of your updates on Facebook and whatnot, it seems like this has been a really pleasurable production for you.
Yeah, it really has been. There have been a couple of days where we were worried about weather, because on a shoot like this, if you're scheduled to shoot outside and it pours, you still have to shoot outside. You don't have the luxury of flipping to an alternate location, because you have actors for specific days and you have locations for specific days. So there have been a few close calls, but everything always worked in our favor. The one problem I've had is this is an 18-day shoot, and it's really a 23 or a 24-day film. So every day by the last 3 hours of production, I'm really rushing mm-hmm. and I'm cutting shots and figuring out how to simplify things just so we can get through our day. But as long as we get some really good stuff, I'm fine with making the compromises every filmmaker's got to make at the end. And we've gotten some really impressive shots. I really can't wait to start editing and see how it all comes together.
And that's my next question, because you're finishing principal photography this week, correct?
Yep, Saturday.
And then you're going to go immediately into post?
Yeah, we've been getting footage to our editor. My editor already is my longtime editor in New York City, Phil Gallo, who's done all of my films since Naked Fear. So first the assistant editor has to sync the stuff up. That's a laborious, mundane process. And then I get to see the footage all put together, and then I start selecting takes. And it's at least a month of work before the editor actually starts putting stuff together.
Mm-hmm. So for people like me that are eagerly awaiting seeing the finished product, I know where you're in the very early stages here, just finishing the actual production.
Mm-hmm.
What sort of time frame are we looking at?
Barring any post-production tragedies, you know, discoveries, mm-hmm. the film will be finished by the end of the year, and that's in part so that my investors can benefit from a tax incentive the New York State offers, and we'll start shopping around right away. So I'm telling everyone we're making a theatrical quality picture. It would be mm-hmm. great if some company gave us a limited theatrical or even a real theatrical in October, but if not, I'm sure it'll be on VOD by then, if not sooner.
I'm totally excited for, you know, everything in Lamberson Land, because, you know, Killer Rack is still yet to be unleashed to the public.
It's strange that I've got them both kind of at the same time. I will give you... Oh, I'm not allowed to say. Well, Killer Rack, probably it'll be in November, and there will be a Slime City Massacre double feature on Blu-ray soon after. So we'll be finishing the year strong, even as we're trying to finish this film.
Mm-hmm. And it's amazing, because for someone with so many amazing things that are happening, and someone who's actually working on his dream project, 32 years in the making, you seem remarkably cool, calm, and collected.
I'm producing as well as directing. Mm-hmm. There's so many things to deal with. I mean, this person has an emergency and may have to leave town right when we need him the most. This person's an hour late and holds production up. These things happen, and you just have to keep everything in perspective. It's all problem solving all mm-hmm. day long.
And I was talking
that's really what it is.
To John today, it was the big hand incident, right?
Yes, the big hand incident. John, the special effects artist, did not realize a hand was made out of gelatin, and it melted all over his car, ultimately costing us probably about $800 to get a new one made. But that's the way it goes. These things just happen, and once you learn to deal with them, mm-hmm. they stop being crippling.
Well, Greg, thank you so much for inviting me up here. It's always a pleasure talking to you.
And it hasn't been that long.
It really hasn't.
We were at Shock
back in London.
That's right,
and
that's right.
It's interesting because back then you sort of intimated that you had a project.
Right.
You kind of made a gesture. So I knew what it was, but I didn't say what it was.
I think it was just coming together then. Mm. We had an investor lined up, and I don't think the paperwork had been completed, but it looked like it was actually going to happen. And this is sort of, you know, this is the one that's been hanging over my head all these years as being an unfinished project. And it's going to be weird now that it's out of the way, because really everything I set out to do, other than the Jake Hellman Files becoming a TV show, which is in somebody else's hands, mm-hmm. I've pretty much accomplished. So I don't know what I do now.
I dig
my grave and lay down. And
well, you know what? I will say right now, you gifted to me at Shockstock, and I'm halfway through Black Creek.
Mm-hmm.
Loving it.
Oh, good.
Fantastic. Any plans on maybe one day bringing that to the screen?
Well, that would be dependent on budget, and you would really need to be able to shoot in an area that looks like Love Canal
mm-hmm.
if you couldn't get in the real one, and that would take some art direction to get something that really had that look. That's not a high priority of mine. The TV stuff with the Jake Hellman Files is, and Carnage Road, either with Craig Sheffer or if the rights come back to me, that's probably the next one. And the strip for Johnny Gruesome 2 is already written.
Awesome.
I will be most happy if it does well enough that, you know, I'm recycling the same story 3 or 4 times and then retire or die. That's fine with me.
Fantastic. Live off the residuals for the rest of your life.
We joke all the time. You know, you get the bigger budget for 2.
Yeah.
You call the third one 3D. And then in the interviews say it was always meant to be a trilogy.
And then number 4 is
and then you do
chapter.
Number 4.
Yeah.
Yep. And then you got a reboot.
With the resurrection. Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, I'd like to see the character go through that whole tacky horror franchise trend.
And then Johnny Gruesome makes Manhattan, of course, right?
And then somebody can remake it. That'll be the next goal, for someone to remake, for me to live long enough that somebody will remake the film.
Awesome. Fantastic. Well, it seems like lunch is about to end, and you're probably due back on set momentarily.
I'm sure I am.
Once again, Greg, thank you so much.
Thanks for coming.
So now I'm sitting here with Emmy-nominated makeup man Craig Lindberg, and Craig is here doing some work on Johnny Gruesome.
Yes.
And you and Greg have gone
back many years.
Yeah, since at least like the late 80s. I still own the script for Undying Love, and I have a habit of writing the years to which the scripts were done from, mm-hmm. and it has 89 on it. I almost brought it with me, but I kind of forgot, so I was like, oh shit, I should bring it with me.
Mm-hmm. You did some stuff for
Undying Love, Naked Fear.
Naked Fear, yep.
I can't recall exactly how we met. I think it might have been through, there's a newspaper in the city called Backstage. Mm-hmm. It's like for actors and all that kind of stuff. And I may have answered an ad in there, or just like I had a habit of, reading through it, if it was a project that sounded kind of interesting, I got in contact with this filmmakers. And that's kind of how I started with my makeup. I just looked things up and say, that sounds kind of cool. And then I would talk to them and work with them.
Mm-hmm. And that was, of course, back when Greg was living in New York City proper. Yes. Now he's in Buffalo.
Yep.
And you're still in New York.
Yes.
But you came here to Buffalo to help Greg on his dream project, Johnny Gruesome.
Yep. I mean, when he asked me to do this, I've done some stuff since he's been up here, but never physically being here. It's like I've done makeups for them. I've done some live casting, fabrication of prosthetics and things like this, but I've always sent them up for someone else to apply them. This is when he asked me to be a part of it, and this is something he's had on the board for a very, very long time, probably since as long as we've known each other. And he's done it in many, many different forms, and when he asked me, there was a certain sense to it that I'm like, he really wanted me to be a part of it, probably because of the history. Mm-hmm. And also, I think he really wanted somebody. He wanted someone, like I said, he's known for a long time. Like, this is more like, hey, they might bring my old friends in part of this because they've been with this thing for so long. So so when he asked me, I said, yeah, I'll do it. Like I said, I gave up a job to come up here and be part of this. And
now, the look of Johnny,
yeah.
How much input did you have and how much input did Greg?
Well, you know, I asked him about what kind of looks was he interested in, and as you look on this, you know, the cover of the art, he's kind of skeletal. He's got half of a flesh tone, he's got half of a fleshy sort of face, mm-hmm. and he's very skeletal on the other side. Now, the limitations to doing that as a prosthetic is when you have to get, the nose is probably the biggest part of it, because you have to get rid of the nose with the skeleton. And my fear was that from the front it would look kind of cool, but from the side I would have to extend the face out. So I sort of said, well, let's see what we can go away with. So I didn't really rot him to the point where bones were sticking out. There's a certain point where part of his eye is showing and his teeth are showing, but I kept it to the flesh being on it. And I did it as a clay sculpture first. Mm-hmm. That's how I usually do it. I do a clay sculpture first, and then I submit the pictures to the director. And they either say, change this or change that, that's cool, that's not so cool. And he said, cool. And then he said he wants him to rot throughout the movie. So he had four different looks to him. And in all, when I added it up, he probably had maybe about seven looks. Because he had his regular look, then he had one where he was bruised, then he had one he was in, you know, when this would happen, and then as he came back and as it went through it, I really wanted that look of the skin just rotting away. And this is, I think it was important to Greg too, as he wanted to see him deteriorate as the movie went along. So every time you see him in every single another scene, unless it's connected, he'll be a little worse. Mm-hmm. And it'll be a little worse, and it'll be a little worse.
So I mentioned before you're Emmy nominated.
Yes.
And you're Emmy nominated for
Boardwalk Empire and Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm.
Boardwalk, if anyone's ever watched the show, there's a sequence in the second season where one of the characters is severely burned and Michael Shannon goes visit him in the hospital. It was me, it was Jeremy Sellenfriend, and Michelle Paris, who was the department head, and the three of us collaborated in making that makeup and applying it. And then Saturday Night Live was for an episode of a particularly heavy prosthetic show in that particular time. And that was the first one, as far as I know, ever being nominated for special effects makeup. Wow. They get nominated like every year, mm-hmm. for the regular makeup. But this was the first particular one only for the prosthetics.
And that kind of amazes me, because with SNL, I mean, it is a live show.
It's a live
what
show.
Some people think, right?
Yeah, a lot of people think it's taped. Like, when do they tape Saturday Night Live? I said, there's a reason why this word live is written in the title. It is a live show. The pre-tapes, obviously, are not.
Right.
But the performances are absolutely all done live.
Well, they tape at 11:30 Saturday night.
11:30 Saturday night to 1 o'clock in the morning. Yep.
So doing prosthetics in that sort of live environment where you must be, you know, ripping stuff on, putting it on, it must be hectic as...
There's a lot of apologies that are given. It's like, sorry, as you're literally... You know, we're not tearing anything off anyone's face.
Right.
We are using the proper solvents to remove it, but it has to happen at a very rapid pace. And it's not just us changing the makeups. It's also costumes changing at the same time. Mm-hmm. It's also wigs changing at the same time. So you have three people surrounding one actor at the moment. So you have them changing their clothes, changing their wigs, and changing their makeups. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we got 2 minutes or less or more, hopefully, to get them out of one look to put them in another look.
Now, of course, the cast members are used to this sort of hectic schedule, but how do the hosts feel sometimes with the...
Sometimes they're not used to it because they're not used to... I mean, the idea is that they come in, most of them understand what SNL is all about. They know the craziness. They have sort of a jinx of it, they have an idea of
it.
When they come in, that there's going to be quick changes that are going to happen. Mm-hmm. And they are usually ferried between the different changing areas by somebody sort of like a handler. Now, they literally will grab them by the arm and say, this way. And then they'll stop and then they'll change out. And some of them are great. You know, they love it. It's a great experience for them. And the big thing that I've always heard from other people that have actually worn prosthetics is the speed. It's like, wow, this took them 4 hours, but you guys put it in 2 minutes. Because they only have 2 minutes to put it on.
Now, I don't want you to get in trouble, so I'm not sure. So even though I want to ask you, like, you know, who are the worst hosts to deal with, I'm not going to ask you that.
But they can find that online.
Right, and I've heard some stories. Online. I've heard some stories.
Yeah.
Who are some of the best?
Well, I don't do the host track, to be perfectly honest.
You do the cast members?
I do one. I have a cast member.
Yeah.
I work on Taron. Taron Killam was my cast member now. Mm-hmm. You hear stories. You know, you hear, like, some of the, well, that one was a... Excuse the expression, that one was a douchebag, or that one was really nice. I mean, it all depends. Like, some of them are very obviously keen on it. They love it. They enjoy it. They like the energy of it. And then there's some people like this. Really? It's just like some of them will never set foot back in that stage again, either by their own choice or by someone else's choice. Yeah, you're not welcome back.
My favorite thing, I mean, I have to admit, I haven't watched SNL in a number of years, but because I'm a big music fan,
right.
I always love it when the musical guests participate in the sketches.
Right. Yeah. I mean, sometimes you'll have a musician, a music guest coming in, and they'll host the show as well as perform on the show. Bruno Mars, if people ever watched the Bruno Mars show, that was like a really great one where he actually sings the different songs by the different artists. Mm-hmm. They just did another version of it. I can't remember her name, who did it, but she did a very similar sketch, but it was all obviously female, or maybe she did the males too, but that was a really great sketch because it really showed his range all across the board. And so sometimes you'll get people that are really good, and sometimes some of those singers, you can see why they'd rather be singers, you know.
And what a lot of people don't realize is it's an exhausting week. I mean, it's not just Saturday night. You guys are at it like Monday through Saturday.
Well, the way it works is Wednesday night is usually when they get together and they do a read-through. There's usually, from our, like I said, I've never attended this because that's not what I do, but they usually read about 40 sketches, and it's the writers, it's the cast members, it's the producers, it's everyone's there. They read about 40 sketches. They choose about 14 of that 40, and that's like a Wednesday night, like, probably wee into the earlier in the mornings. Mm-hmm. Once they assign those 14 sketches, all the notes go to the different departments. So you have the hair people, the makeup people, the wardrobe people, the costume people, the scenic designers, the scenic fabricators, the painters, the camera people, the directors. Everyone gets their notes. So from, we'll say, early morning, Thursday morning, till Saturday night, they're working. Mm-hmm. So it's an exhausting 2.5-3 days. So the makeup guys, what they build in 2.5 days usually will, if they have, you know, take people months, and they only have 2.5 days, and they almost never, I think 99.9% of the time, they do not say no.
And sometimes in dress rehearsal, sketches get cut.
Absolutely.
And have you ever worked on
sometimes
something?
Sometimes during the show, they'll cut a sketch, and you put someone in a makeup, and over the loudspeaker, they'll announce, we're changing the sketch. It's now this sketch, so now you spent the time putting them in the makeup, now you got to take that makeup off and put them into a totally different makeup.
Wow.
And costume, and wig, and totally other place. It's happened. It's actually happened when we actually are changing people. It's happened before. They said, we're changing this if it's sketchy. You're like, oh my God. And you're running back to grab stuff and you're coming over there and you're putting this other thing on them and things like this. Because it's a live show and a lot of people intimidated by it. Mm-hmm. And some people just really embrace it.
Right.
You know?
I was going to say, I mean, how many years have you been working on SNL for?
11 seasons.
Wow. So when you do something like, let's say, Boardwalk Empire, it must be a breeze, you know, after the...
Yeah, you know what it is? It's like sometimes I go to myself, wow, how long have I been working on this? Oh my God, I'm taking too long. And sometimes I kind of like to go, ah, la, 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 la. Oh, I got 2 hours, okay, la, 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 la. And they go, oh, it's been 2 hours. I said, it's already been 2 hours already? I'm not done yet. Hold on. And then I'm like, wait, I think I took a little bit too long. Yeah, sometimes it's nice to be able to kind of take your time instead of slapping someone in. I mean, it's amazing. And some of the work that goes out there for a two-minute application looks like they did 2 hours of an application because they're that good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they've got it down to a science. They know exactly how to make it go right the first time. So that's the most important part about it. If you have to do it again or do something to it, it adds more time to the end result.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do it right as it begins, by the time it's done, it's done. You can walk away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the most important thing. Because no one cares about the X amount of hours it took to put on. They just care about the fact that it's ready for the sketch.
Mm-hmm.
And you did it in the time allotted for the sketch.
So you're, Craig, you're here in Buffalo for, what, 2 more days, I think?
Yeah.
And then you're heading back to New York.
And I'm back to New York,
What are your plans for this summer?
Well, I'm on a show called The Deuce, which is on HBO. It's a new show on HBO as far as... James Franco is the lead actor, and Maggie Gyllenhaal is the lead actress in it. It's about pimps, hoes, and what 42nd Street used to be like. So it's all a lot of prostitutes and period makeups, you know, laying hair, and, you know, get back those sideburns, covering tattoos, all that kind of stuff, you know.
How long would it take to cover these?
A couple hours, my friend.
Yeah.
Yeah. Couple hours.
Yeah,
because that's a lot. You know, the worst part is you got the hair on your arms.
Mm-hmm.
That's always the dead giveaway because you're actually applying something to the skin, but the hair is in the way.
Yeah.
So that's the hardest part. Then be like, you know, we might shave you. You're gonna look a little weird, but we'll shave you. It'll ultimately look better because you don't have that weird texture that hair would leave you when you're putting on makeup over it.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Craig, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very
much. Great stories, man.
Thank you.
So now I got with me all the way from Ohio. Was that correct?
Yes. Yeah. I'm from Ohio, but actually I live in L.A. now. But I'm spending some time now with the family after we finish filming Johnny Gruesome.
Awesome. I have Johnny Gruesome himself, Anthony De La Torre. I got to say, it's funny. I was on the set of Johnny Gruesome earlier this week. I came there one day after you left, because I think you wrapped up on Monday night, I believe?
Oh, crap.
Yeah, and, you know...
Yeah.
And I feel like I've kind of met you, because everybody who was there was sort of feeling your absence. You're like, oh, man, Anthony's gone, or, oh, he should have been here when Anthony was here. Oh, we miss Anthony. And
Dude, the whole casting crew was so sweet. Seriously, they were awesome. So much fun to work with.
And, yeah, everybody had nothing but amazing things to say about you. Like, everybody I spoke to. So, despite the fact that we couldn't meet...
I paid all of them.
So, despite the fact we couldn't be face-to-face, I feel like I kind of, you know, I kind of met you. But at the same time, I mean, it would have been cool if you...
Exactly, yeah.
To meet you, shake your hand, what have you. But I'm glad we're chatting right now.
Yes, I am shaking your hand in spirit right now.
Awesome. Now, I got a few things I want to talk to you about, but of course, first thing we're going to talk about is Johnny Gruesome. So, you just wrapped filming, and tell me about the experience.
It was amazing. I mean, seriously, it couldn't have gone any better or more as I had imagined it. Greg was the coolest guy, such a great director. You know, he's a no BS, no ego guy. He just sets a great tone and atmosphere on set, and we all really just, I mean, everybody did an amazing job, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They all came, everybody was very professional, and you know, working with Byron Brown was just fantastic, as Eric, being able to feed off of each other's energy while filming, it was just great, you know. Yeah, I really only have positive things to say about it, honestly. It was just a lot of fun. I don't think I'm ever going to play a character that's that much fun ever again. I'm going to say Johnny is so free. You know, he really has no limits. And getting to play that is just like an actor's dream. At least it's mine.
And it's amazing, too, because, I mean, as you know, this has been Greg's dream project for 32 years. And I talked to him about that, and, you know, over the years, you know, who were you considering casting for Johnny, and there were all these different guys. And the one thing he said is that I think that this was, now was the time for me to make it. Like, the stars aligned, because Anthony was the perfect Johnny.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I honestly feel like he wrote me into existence, because there are so many, I was just able to connect with the character so much that it was just very, very easy for me to relate to his objectives and you know, everything that he wanted to get done in the film. So it was just, it couldn't have been a more perfect role for me to get to play. And yeah, it was great. It was great.
And of course, I was talking with April Ann, who plays Karen, your love interest, right?
She's a very, very talented girl.
Yeah, she was awesome, and she was
singing great. Great actress.
And another one person I talked to, I love talking to this guy, Craig Lindberg, who designed a lot of your makeup for Johnny Gruesome.
Oh, dude, Craig is the freaking man. He killed it, seriously. The makeup was phenomenal, and we had so much fun together. Mm-hmm. It was great. Love that guy.
But when I was there, I mean, it was a really hot day, and it's been a pretty hot summer, and I'm sure that you're shooting underneath some of those prosthetics on some really, really swellingly hot days.
Yeah, I'm sure that they'll have plenty of behind the scenes footage of me sweating my freaking face off and like begging Craig to remove the prosthetic. But no, it was great. I mean, yeah, it was a sweaty couple of days, but you know what? It was absolutely worth it. Seriously, it was intense. But yeah, it was very hot, and I also had the leather jacket on for most of the time.
Gee, I don't know how you...
So you can only imagine.
I can only imagine. Like I said, I was sweating buckets. I was only there for one day. No prosthetics, no leather jacket, so...
Yeah.
Now, tell me how you got the part.
I had just finished shooting Pirates of the Caribbean, and I think it was 3 days after I had gotten back to L.A., I had seen a casting notice online, and I submitted just, you know, my headshot, and Greg reached out to me the very next day, and we started the conversation, and he sent me the script, and then, you know, a couple months later, there we are shooting the movie. And, you know, something you said about him wanting to make the film forever, I mean, I had only known about the project for maybe 3 months before we started shooting, and it was so satisfying to get to shoot it. So I can only imagine, you know, for Greg, it was 32 years in the making, you know what I mean? He's been wanting to make this film forever, so... Awesome.
You mentioned that you just came off Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales. That must have been pretty cool.
Yeah, that was seriously a dream come true. I'm not allowed to say what role I played, but it was really, really an incredible experience. And, you know, being on that set was just, like, I felt like I was 12 years old again. So that was an incredible, incredible experience. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, all the same, it must have been interesting going from a really big budget production to going to a low budget production, which is what Johnny Gruesome is.
Yeah, but you know, it's obviously different in that, you know, millions of dollars aren't being spent on a day to day basis. But you know, I think the professionalism of everybody that worked on Johnny Gruesome is seriously just as high. I mean, they set such a great standard for everybody, and it just felt like a big movie. I mean, you know, you got to be on the set, but there were some days where it was just, you know, there were so many people working on the film, and it felt like a big movie, you know, and it honestly didn't feel that much different at all. So.
And you're also going to be in Lords of Chaos, right?
Yeah, that shoots in Hungary, I believe, in October now.
Oh, shooting in Hungary. Have you been there before?
No, I haven't.
Oh,
I am very much looking forward to it.
Man, I'm half Hungarian. I've been there twice.
Oh, that's amazing. My business partner just got his Hungarian citizenship.
Really?
His dad is Hungarian.
It's such a beautiful country. I assume you'll be in Budapest? Or?
Yes. Yep, in Budapest.
It's absolutely gorgeous. I'm jealous that you're going. I would have loved to. I'd love to go back. I'll go back again and again and again. And of course, that's the story of the Norwegian black metal band Mayhem.
Yep.
And you're playing.
Yeah, it's going to be a very intense film, but I think it's awesome that it's being made because it's an incredible story. You know, it's really, really crazy, exciting, intense story.
And you're playing a pretty pivotal role.
I'm playing the role of Faust. He was the drummer in Emperor, and you know he did what was called the gay murder, which is just you know he killed somebody and then blamed it on the fact that they were gay. But that kind of led to I think it was a very pivotal moment in the story, at least as far as I'm aware of the story, and that because of that. It led to the downfall of the group, you know, of the satanic cult.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Now, you're playing, you know, you're going to be playing in this movie where you're playing a musician, and you are a musician. You have a band, De La Torre, correct?
Yes.
And
yes, sir.
This morning, I actually checked out your website, and I watched a video for This Summer's Gonna Hurt. I have yet to get the song out of my head. I watched about 3 hours ago. Awesome.
I am so sorry.
No, it's great. You know,
thanks, and I appreciate it.
It's funny because it says Maroon 5 cover. I've never heard the original, so I don't know, you know, what the original sounds like, but I guarantee you it wasn't as rocking as you guys played it.
No, yeah, we definitely rocked that one up.
And
that was a lot of fun. I mean, we recorded that and shot that in Nashville last year. It was a really fun video to make. I edited it myself.
Oh, awesome.
It was fun. It was a good time.
And you guys are, it said on your website that you guys are actually recording a record right now entitled Matador, which should be coming out sometime soon. Is that the case?
Yes. The album will be coming out early 2017. I'm actually going right after my trip now in Ohio. I'm going to Nashville to finish the vocals for the rest of the track.
Mm-hmm.
And then, it'll be done. I wish it was done right now, but, you know, I'm just eager to get the music out there. But it will be done soon enough. It's happening, so, yeah, I'm very excited about that.
So how would you describe the sound of your band?
It's interesting because, I mean, we just do all types of rock. I mean, we have some more, we have some very heavy stuff. We have some more pop stuff. Kind of a wide spectrum of rock, but it's just rock music, you know, just a rock band.
Well, that's what I loved about it, because nowadays, I mean, one thing we're really lacking are good rock bands, you know what I mean? Like, you turn on the radio now, and it's not rock anymore, and growing up, I mean, that's what everyone was into, you know? And when I watched the...
Absolutely.
Yeah, I watched your videos, I'm like, man... This is great rock again, and it was like I really enjoyed it. Like I said, so I'm really looking forward to the record.
Thank you, man. Thank you. I really appreciate it. Yeah, it's cool that I think rock is going to be coming back. You know, the pendulum is always swinging back and forth from rock music to disco music. You know, and I think rock is on its way back. I have a good feeling about it.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. I mean, it's been too long.
Yeah, there's the Struts. I don't know if you. You know the Struts? That's just another rock band that's getting a ton of radio play this year. So, you know, there's a couple bands popping up here and there that are starting to break out, and it's really exciting for rock music. It's awesome.
And how long have you been playing with your band?
I've been with the band now for about 2 years and a half. We started in Nashville, and then we just traveled. From L.A. to Nashville, back and forth doing shows and stuff, and then recording mainly in Nashville.
A record coming out, three movies, three, you know, fairly big movies. I mean, how do you keep yourself sort of, like, down to earth?
I would say, well, this film was great. It was a beautiful reminder that death is coming for us all. I got to shoot a scene where I attended my own funeral, and it was very humbling, to say the least, you know, to lie in a coffin. like that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
So, I gotta say, man, like, you know, I, as I said before, I really, really wish I could have met you.
Thank you, man. It's great to talk to you, for real.
And yeah, for sure. And thank you so much for talking to us. And I can't wait for everything you got coming out, man. I mean, whether it's Pirates of the Caribbean, Lords of Chaos, most especially Johnny Gruesome, because I've been a fan of Greg's forever, and, you know, and your record as well.
I am so excited to watch Johnny Gruesome, seriously. I cannot wait to watch that.
Thank you so much for talking to me, Anthony.
Thank you.